Thank you for joining us today on Modern Tech News on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Today, we have the great honor and privilege of interviewing Dr. Don Kennedy, the 9th president of Stanford University. Dr. Kennedy was president of Stanford University from 1980 to 1992. After that, he was editor-in-chief of Science Magazine. Dr. Kennedy has been on the faculty of Stanford University from 1960 to the present. He joined Stanford after getting his PhD in biology from Harvard University, and he has been at Stanford ever since, except for 2 years, from 1977 to 1979, when he served as commissioner for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Dr. Kennedy's career has been blessed by many honors and awards. The most recent recognition came from Stanford University, which named the newest graduate residence the Don Kennedy Complex. This residence opened on August 15th, and it is the nicest graduate residence on campus. In today's interview, Dr. Kennedy discussed his vision for Stanford University when he became president, the role of Stanford University as a leading institution in scientific research, and what we need to do to make sure that all universities in California have adequate funding for scientific research. Dr. Kennedy also talked about the importance of arts education. He had some advice for Stanford freshmen and Stanford graduates. And at the end of the interview, Dr. Kennedy had wonderful things to say about sports at Stanford. Thank you so much for joining us today for this interview with one of the most distinguished guests that we had on KZSU. And we would also like to thank Dr. Kennedy very much for his time and for this interview. What were your plans and vision to improve education at Stanford when you became president in 1980?
There's always an inaugural ceremony, and so the new president has to make a speech. And the new speech is expected to reflect some priorities that he or she is going to follow. I think I would mention two primarily important things. One is that Stanford had been through a difficult period of time in the 10 years before, which had largely been brilliantly managed by Richard W. Lyman, who was my predecessor. In a sense, that left a clear field for some new things to be done. And what I was particularly interested in is A, restoring a kind of communication internally in the university that would make us feel substantially more comfortable with one another, a communitarian vision, if you want to put it that way. And that we also had to make some serious efforts to strengthen our appointment policies with regard to the humanities. Stanford had such an awesome reputation in science and engineering that there was a little worry that we would be thought of as Stanford Tech by the outside world. And I thought that paying serious attention to the humanities, in which we already had some very strong departments, particularly history and others, that we ought to strengthen and rebalance the humanities against the sciences in a productive way.
How did you try to improve scientific research at Stanford while you were president?
I think the answer to that question is really that there is not a single thing that a president can do to improve scientific research except encourage good appointments and get faculty members to help with the task of recruitment. So there certainly are examples of that. One example is when I had met first with a man named Arnold Beckman, who was a very distinguished researcher at Caltech and had lots of ideas about how scientific initiatives could be taken on behalf of a university with some faculty leadership. What I learned from that discussion was that Arnold Beckman would like very much to help Stanford in that regard, although his first loyalty had been to Caltech, and that if I could bring together some faculty leaders to talk to him about what might be done at Stanford using his name and imposing some new and exciting standards for science at Stanford. There was ultimate agreement on that, and both Paul Berg and Arthur Kornberg went down with me to meet with Arnold Beckman. The result is a Beckman Center for Molecular Biology at Stanford. That's surely been a major factor under Paul Berg in improving the quality of scientific research here and allowing us to make new kinds of valuable scientific appointments.
Do you think Stanford University also leads in the arts and the humanities?
In addition to the humanities and the sciences, Stanford has an important place to claim in the arts. Under the leadership of several of my predecessors, there is now an arts center for not only studio art, but the history of art, an outstanding new appointment at Stanford for a scholar in art history, and the emphasis on science, performance, and history of art has an important role to play. We need to talk about the humanities and balancing them with the sciences. We need to talk a little bit about arts and music and art history, and that center is being built very impressively by Stanford right now. And it's an important asset to the community that we were able to bring from Yale, actually, a very brilliant teacher of art history, Alex Nemirov, who is attracting lots of students to his classes and has given us a chance to rebalance our excellence by including the arts. The Bing Concert Hall is one aspect. The modern art paintings that we received from Punk and Moo Anderson is another example. So there's an art center that's now really developing rapidly on the campus and creating a different kind of balance between the sciences and humanities and the arts.
How did the demographics of Stanford students change while you were president of Stanford?
The demographics of the student body changed dramatically during my presidency. It has also changed on a continuing basis through the terms of my successors. And I think the general conclusion that one ought to reach from that is that Stanford is trying to attract a more diverse and more interesting student body. It used to be, I think, in 1980, that it was relatively rare for us to enroll graduate students, PhD candidates, from parts of the world with which Stanford was less familiar. We were more regional in those days than we are now. So that has affected the mix of doctoral students, the very same ones that will live in this new center that's being attached to the Kennedy name. So the demographics change because people sense the need for it. We have become more attractive and more interesting to students of various traditional minorities. We need to make a place for more bright students of whatever ethnicity and personal history to continue to improve the strength of our teaching programs and what the students bring to one another. So I wouldn't say that that's something I have accomplished, but my successors and I, in a continuing basis, have been fortunate enough to view an evolution whereby Stanford's undergraduate student body looks a little bit more like the world outside of Stanford.
What were the most important things that you accomplished while president of Stanford?
I want to mention two or three things that seem particularly important to me. The Haas Center, which is a bridge to communicate or allow to associate the interest of Stanford students in service and service learning and incorporating service into the academic program. That has resulted from some serious fundraising, gifts from the Haas family. We have had, I think, a very successful experience with that center. There is a new center called Stanford in Washington. It's not all that new. It was begun relatively earlier in my presidency, and it has become enormously attractive to students who come to spend a quarter, or in fact, in several cases, more than a quarter, with a faculty director and some other visitors who are brought in to do that. In fact, after I stopped being president, the first year I spent at Stanford in Washington with a group of students who are seriously interested in the environment and health. So there is a way of persuading students that there's a set of insights about government and about agencies that are in Washington and work with government so that there's support and mentorship available for undergraduate students there.
What are some of the things that you wish you could have done while president of Stanford University?
I think it was important for the president to understand the faculty's feeling about indirect costs, costs that are paid in addition to the spendable monies that the grant is for, and how those were misunderstood and caused occasional difficulties. Those difficulties eventually grew into a series of hearings about indirect costs and indirect cost controversies at Stanford, in which the university, did not look very good at all. And so one of the things that I wish I could have done was to understand the depth of that faculty concern over the relationship between indirect and direct costs.
While you were president of Stanford, there was a discussion that the Reagan Library would be built at Stanford. Do we know why that project was canceled?
You'll have to ask them, because we didn't make it. That is, it was a unilateral decision by the president's supporters and family that, as a result of a debate that occurred during a faculty meeting that made some suggestions about softening the visual aspects of the installation in the foothills, it was finally decided by them that, after all, they wanted to have a presidential library someplace else. And so we didn't make that decision.
Thank you for joining us today on Modern Tech News on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Today, we are honored to interview Dr. Don Kennedy, who was president of Stanford University from 1980 to 1992. While president of Stanford, Dr. Kennedy welcomed a few heads of state to Stanford University, including President Gorbachev and Queen Elizabeth. In this section, Dr. Kennedy will discuss the significance of the visits to Stanford by President Gorbachev and Queen Elizabeth.
I think their significance was probably different for the different cases. To those two, I would add President Mitterrand of France. All three of them, I think, came because they had noted the special and unique character of the relationship between Stanford and Silicon Valley, and the technology and the outbursts of technology that has occurred there. Of these three visits, Gorbachev's was interesting because it occurred at a difficult time in his career in the whole nuclear arms reduction debate between the Soviet Union and the United States. He had been losing some power at that time, and I think his visit for him may have been a timely occasion. For Queen Elizabeth, it was just a delightful privilege. She was curious, she was interested, she was a fascinating presence. But I think it was the proximity of Silicon Valley and Stanford that may have interested our English visitors as much as anything else.
How was President Mitterrand's visit to Stanford?
In a way, the least productive of those visits was Mitterrand's. He wanted to talk a lot to Silicon Valley technologists, and I think he wanted to create a very positive impression about how well the French had done in those terms and not simply laud the work that had been done at Stanford. In any event, there was a little tension about those visits in which Mitterrand may have felt that French technology was not taken seriously enough by some of the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs with which he talked. That's just an impression. We met him, welcomed him. It was interesting. I think less satisfying for him, perhaps, than the visits for the others.
Why was President Gorbachev's visit to Stanford interesting?
Gorbachev was interesting. He gave the first speech on national television that he had given from an American university. I had to introduce him. I had a very carefully structured text that I had worked out with George Shultz, who was my mentor in such occasional matter. And the speech I made consisted primarily of introducing Stanford to President Gorbachev. Gorbachev made a thoughtful and interesting speech, but I think that the near-term future for him in the Soviet Union was not as bright as he would have hoped at the time.
Thank you for joining us today on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Today, we have the honor of interviewing Dr. Don Kennedy, who was Stanford's 9th president, and after that, he had a very big role in popularizing science while he was editor-in-chief of Science magazine. In this section, Dr. Kennedy will discuss his role as editor-in-chief of Science. Science magazine has more than 1.5 million subscribers. Was it easy to find articles that all readers of science would understand?
The answer to that is no way. It's impossible to do that because it is a journal that covers the whole range of specialties from anthropology to zoology. And there are specialists who cannot possibly understand what other specialists have written in their section of the magazine. So our policy is to evaluate submitted research articles by our editors and by peer reviewers who are recruited from the same intellectual community as the submitters. But there is no way that an astrophysicist can be instantly understood by a molecular biologist. And so what we do is essentially to make science available online to universities where there are lots and lots of eager subscribers. So the breadth of science's coverage is what stands in the way of being able to make sure that everybody who reads science understands everything in it. They never will.
What do you think scientists need to do today to make science easy for the general public and even children to understand?
I guess the first answer is to speak convincingly and in terms that are understandable. I try to encourage that among PhD students I have had, because in addition to responding to questions from their PhD committee and so forth, I sometimes ask them to supply what I have come to term an elevator speech. You're getting on the ground floor into an elevator in which you will be accompanying a number of basically intelligent but not specialist kinds of people. What can you tell them between the ground floor and the 13th floor about your research that you would like them to know? And if you can manage to do that, you can probably be as convincing and as persuasive about your own work as you could possibly be.
You have worked very hard in trying to solve the climate change issues. Do you think your work is almost done? And why do you think it took so long to popularize climate change issues?
The first answer is we're not finished yet, not even close to finished yet. And the reason for that, I think, is, first of all, that there is some serious doubt being thrown at the science in the argument for climate change. That's the first problem. There is a community of denialists who do not want climate change to become a major economic issue in this country. So in that sense, we're not done yet. The other reason is that people in general favor immediate or proximate issues over long-term threats. So there's a built-in neglect of climate change issues, both because some people deny the science and also because people tend to favor proximate or current needs way over far ahead ones.
What do you think the role of the media should be in popularizing science?
That really relates, I think, to what we've just discussed about climate change issues. Very often the media, in treating climate change, insist on talking to a scientist who is committed to climate change, but balance that discussion by having a conversation with one of the people who denies the seriousness of climate change and has problems about the scientific piece of the problem.
Do you think people who popularize science need to have special leadership skills?
I don't think special leadership skills are needed in popularizing science. Certainly people who care about it and are passionate about the subject and believe that it can make a difference in everybody's lives can enjoy a level of popularity that makes them especially convincing and even charismatic people advocating for science. Carl Sagan was one of those. There certainly will be others.
You're listening to KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Our guest is Dr. Don Kennedy, former president of Stanford University. And in this section, Dr. Kennedy will discuss federal reduction of spending on scientific research.
I'm discouraged by the present picture in spending on science and education, especially by the federal government. We have been living for some time with what is often described as a kind of partnership between the federal government and the universities. In fact, the federal government, as part of that bargain, has imposed some regulatory requirements on universities, and those not only involve the conduct of research, but its objectives and purposes. I think scientists at Stanford and other American universities today will need to find other ways of supporting scientific research because the prospects for any improvements in the non-discretionary federal government are very, very low. Stanford, in a way, has an advantage owing to its success in raising money from foundations, from individuals, from its capacity to build an endowment which can support a good deal of scientific research as well as work in the humanities or education of other kinds. We are in a very interesting situation with respect to our colleagues at the University of California at Berkeley. Stanford has a very large and successful endowment in terms of its growth rates. The University of California at Berkeley is laboring under a very unfavorable state budgetary restrictions, and so it is far less capable than we are at Stanford in mobilizing university-held funds or funds budgeted by the state for the university to use. I think it's important for Stanford and Stanford's leadership to call attention to the very sad situation with respect to the University of California. We're well off. They should be as well off. We should help them get there.
How do you think Stanford can help Berkeley and other UC schools get more funding for research?
I think it's important for leadership at Stanford to say how fortunate we are and to urge Californians to support the University of California by supporting budgets that are generous to that university. I've talked to President Hennessy about that. I think President Hennessy generally agrees and has done a good bit of it.
Do you think it's important to have more American students getting graduate degrees in science?
Yes, absolutely. It's good to increase the number of American students who are doing that. But I want to emphasize that we need to support non-American students as well. We have foreign students who are studying in very active and successful doctoral programs. We need to make sure that they are superbly educated and anxious to practice their science, either on immigration visas here in the United States or when they go back to their own countries. We should not be increasing the number of American students who are getting graduate degrees in scientific disciplines from the point of view of increasing American competitiveness with other nations. That's not, I think, the appropriate mission. I think we will perform our function successfully if we have people trained here, going elsewhere, trained here, staying here, all those different ways.
Do you think going to the voters with propositions to fund scientific research is a good idea? For example, Proposition 71 did that to fund stem cell research in California.
Yes, that was a wonderful initiative. The question is it possible to see more states funding research in science in this way? And I think the answer is the chances are good. Everybody's looked at Proposition 71 and its success here. There's some envy with the fact that researchers here, for example, stem cells researchers like Irving Weissman, can go to those funds and make good use of it. This will happen elsewhere, but it will happen especially if other leaders like Irv Weissman was here to take the lead in the additional states. It takes somebody who is convinced about the merit of the research, somebody who believes that there's a state interest in it as well.
Do you think the UC schools can have a proposition to increase their budget?
Well, I think they can certainly work with the governor, and I think some Stanford people should be supportive in working with the governor to make the university's budget a more central aim of the budget process in the state of California.
Which Stanford schools do you think would work with the governor to increase the budget for the UC school system?
Well, there have been frequent contacts between members of all faculties, but I think particularly the law school faculty, and efforts that might be encouraged to rebalance the opportunity levels of Cal and Stanford by making certain that the Cal share of the budget is increased.
Thank you for joining us today on Modern Tech News on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Our guest today is a very distinguished scientist, Dr. Don Kennedy, who was president of Stanford University from 1980 to 1992. Are there many scientists who are university presidents, and how did you develop the leadership skills required to become Stanford's president?
There are a number of scientists who are very good university presidents. Not all of them got trained in the same way. I never got trained in the sense of preparing deliberately in an organization that taught me things about management or skills that are related to management. I did serve a hitch in government as commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. And in government, generally, when you issue a request or a command, people are anxious to follow it and tell you that they're very glad to have the initiative to go ahead. But a lot of the president's work in a university is dependent upon responding to or hoping to develop a corpus of faculty members who are interested in the kinds of things that the president is excited about and wants to do. So persuasion of the faculty is really important. If that involves a skill that amounts to successful presidency, I think that's probably a good example. The skill is the skill to persuade others that there is a useful goal to be met by their collective efforts.
You're listening to KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Our guest, Dr. Don Kennedy, has helped popularize science while he was editor-in-chief of Science Magazine. How did you become interested in science?
I was interested in natural history. I was a bird watcher and a butterfly collector and a trooper around in the woods. That's what got me interested in science. And I think when I first was an undergraduate, I was a little disappointed that there wasn't as much natural history of the kind that I was interested in. And eventually, I became somebody whose research was focused on animal behavior and on the nervous system. And so I was able to lay out an interest in nature through some of the research I was doing, although it was, I think, a disappointing part of my undergraduate education at Harvard, which was largely based on chemistry and the most reductionist approach to biology.
Do you have any advice for parents as to how they can teach their children about science and leadership?
Turn them loose and encourage them enormously to undertake tasks with other young people in which they find and can locate and even describe a set of mutual interests. If they can work with others and exercise some leadership, if the opportunity arises, that's an important thing to teach them.
What advice would you give students who are coming to Stanford as freshmen?
Last year, my granddaughter came as a freshman. So my advice to the students today who are coming to Stanford as freshmen is read the three books. I so enjoyed when my granddaughter was admitted that there were three books, and I read and commented on all of them. I liked some better than others. One I liked wildly, and it was The Art of Fielding, which was, I thought, a terrifically interesting and imaginative book. And I just loved reading it with my granddaughter.
What advice would you give to students who are graduating this year?
These are undergraduates who are leaving Stanford that we're talking about here. Because PhD students who are leaving have a set of really interesting problems with their scientific mentors or their humanistic mentors about how they plan a career, how they get good mentors in the next place they're going. If we're talking about graduating seniors who are undergraduates, look around at all the possibilities, and among the possibilities, try to select one in which you are likely to have a good mentor. Because being able to work with somebody who understands your motivations and your interests and is as passionate as you are about something, then that's the best help you could possibly give yourself as you choose one or another alternative. I have some wonderful seniors who have an incredible richness of opportunities. They've been in one or two or three special programs. They have all kinds of opportunities. As I talk about their experiences with them, it's amazing to me how much the quality of mentorship that they have received from individual people who have been the most important influences on their undergraduate careers.
Thank you for joining us today on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Our guest today is Dr. Don Kennedy, who was president of Stanford University in the 1980s. Stanford University recently honored Dr. Kennedy by naming a new graduate student complex, which houses about 436 graduate students, the Kennedy Complex.
The Kennedy Complex at Stanford is exciting to me. It is wonderful. I have visited it. I haven't explored the inside of the building carefully. I'm going to leave that to people who know more architecture than I do, Roger Whitney and others who are going to be doing that. I have great respect for, and I've talked at length with several of the people who made the decision to do this. I'm unbelievably thrilled about it. And the idea that it will be occupied by the kinds of PhD students that I've had experiences with at different stage in my career and lifetime, and how much of an opportunity it's likely to be for them. I just think it's wonderful.
Before leaving Dr. Don Kennedy, I had to ask about what he thinks of sports at Stanford.
I love sports. I think sports, as I experienced them as president, we weren't as successful in some sports as we have become lately. But in general, I think that student interest in their fellow students who happen to be athletes and who happen to be their roommates and their classmates and everything. The fact that we don't have a separate athletic dormitory, we don't create campus heroes in that way, it just works fine. My granddaughter's companion in a French class was an offensive lineman for Stanford that must have weighed 315 pounds and was about to be selected in the NFL draft. Well, they just had this totally casual, natural relationship, and you can't persuade a Stanford student that sports are overdone here. But sports are done about right here. If you look at the graduation records of our leading athletes, they're just marvelous. We're not handicapping them academically.
Did you go to many Stanford sports events while you were president? And do you still go to those events, or do you sometimes listen to them on KZSU?
I used to appear at football games and at basketball games and always liked doing so. I still do that. I will listen on KZSU whenever there's an opportunity, but I usually go.
You've been listening to Modern Tech News on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Thank you for joining us today, and we would also like to thank our distinguished guest, Dr. Don Kennedy, very much for his time and for this interview. If you would like a copy of this interview, please download it from our website, moderntechnews.com. That's modernteknews.com.